Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
Good morning. Welcome all of our campuses together. We have people gathered all over southeastern North Carolina. It's a really privilege to be able to be together. And before I jump in to the fourth part of our series, Mad World, I want us to take a moment to say thank you. But 2 weeks ago, I talked about some of the financial updates that we have. And if you weren't here, you're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Basically how what's happening right now over the next few weeks actually impacts our planning and our budgeting for 2018. So we had a lot of folks have responded. A lot of people for the first time have said, hey, I'm going to give for the first time. I haven't been doing that in a while. I'm super grateful. We appreciate the response. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, you can go to portcitychurch.org/update. And there's you'll see the whole blurb as to how it's a pretty succinct description of how we do our budget and such. And anybody who has questions about the budget, it is online. We welcome any questions anytime from anybody. And we're glad to help that. I want you to be aware of what is happening so you can see that. In fact, you can, if you're really bored in the message, you can just go and check that. It's just got audio, so don't make it too loud. It'll sound like I'm talking in two different places, and that will be uncool to the people around you. All right, so thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. It makes a big difference. Thank you. I've started watching the news again. Can we turn that off over there if you don't mind? I don't know if anybody's back there can do that. But I started watching the news again, and not for a lot of reasons, and I have to take it in chunks because I'm going to take so much. Trying to really identify the issues in our culture. What is going on? And what I notice is there are essentially two ways of thinking, if I can be so descriptive. Now, I know there's a third, but you get the idea. There's two ways of thinking, essentially. And I begin to think about this. If you take every issue that affects us as a culture, do we really believe that if you are on one side of one issue, that it automatically means you're on the same side of another issue? Like, there are hundreds of issues. I've wrestled this in my own life because there are things that I believe that are on one side of the issue, and then there's another issue I'm like, well, I probably side more on this side. I probably land more. So I begin to think, because what happens is the way it gets described is, it depends on which news agency you watch and which issue it is, that someone has reached across the aisle or someone has abandoned their party. And so everything is always spun in this way. Not that we're working, it depends on what the issue is. And so I begin to think this. The system that we currently have is not going to resolve the issues that we have. The system that we currently use is not going to solve the issues in our country. So my goal in this series is to help us to understand kind of who we are, where we are, and how we enter in and navigate this mad world. This is not, I want you to hear me very carefully, this is not like just throw our hands up in the air, it's never going to be different. This is to say, we have an opportunity to do things so fundamentally different that I believe actually has the chance to make the kind of difference that we all long for. But it's going to take a significant gut check from everybody's part. This has been really rough on me for the last few weeks because I've come to realize that I'm more self-centered than I thought. James 3:16, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every other evil practice. Whenever we drive or are driven to force our way, to have our way, every other disorder and every other vile practice will sort of flow from that place. So the first thing that has to happen is we have to figure out a different way of thinking about the world around us. And that's been my aim in this, because what we have to start look at is where is it that you find your sufficiency? And we've talked about this as kind of by way of review. Where is it you find your sufficiency? Wherever you find your sufficiency is where you're going to find your center. And for most of us, if we're honest, we find our sufficiency in ourselves, which leads us to this place of being self-centered. Now, if you haven't been here, here's kind of way that works. A self-centered person basically demands that the whole universe revolve around them. Anybody know anybody like that? Right? It's kind of all of us. It's kind of all of us. We demand just by instinct, by waking up, we demand that the world revolve around, we demand that the whole earth orbit around us. Problems are defined as we define problems. And they usually don't become problems until they actually enter into our orbit and affect our orbit. As long as the world is revolving carefully around us, it's really not a problem to us. It's someone else's problem, someone else's issue. It's interesting, I hear issues discussed all the time about American stuff, and then you travel overseas and you see places like India or Africa or stuff that's happening in the Middle East or Egypt and other places in the world, and you realize that, wow, we live in a world that is really, really crazy. It's just madness. And we get really myopic in the way we look at the world sometimes. But what happens is, if I'm demanding you orbit around me and you're demanding that I orbit around you, the gravitational pull, or really it just repels each other away from one another. And it's the exact opposite of what most of us long for, and it's certainly the exact opposite of what God has dreamed and called us to. And so I want to make that case today. Now, basically, if you're following along, I said we're self-sufficient, we're self-centered, and madness, I believe, results from trust. I believe that your heart is longing to trust something that's solid. And in that void of trust, in our intolerance of distrust, we wind up trusting things that just aren't trustworthy. And a lot of us put our stock in a lot of things, and sometimes that trustworthiness has yielded disappointment, and other times it's the fact that we just keep thinking, if this can happen, if this can happen, if this can happen, if this can happen, then the world will be right. And I don't know that that is correct. So, again, one more thing before I kind of tell you where we're going. We live in a world that has the power to make you think and feel whatever they want. We talked about this last week and at some depth. We live in a world that has the power to make you think and feel whatever they want. And as a human being, you have to get a handle on this, or else you're probably going to get sucked in to whatever it is, the latest thing that's going on. So I want to just talk about some issues that are as controversial as I can get without getting myself in trouble. So here's issue number one. The speed limit is 45. What do you do? How many of you drive 45 exactly? Let me see your hands. Young, in all the campuses, we're taking like a poll here. It's too hard, isn't it? I mean, you'd have a wreck just trying to keep it on 45. It's like, oh, 46, gotta get slow down. So nobody, somebody raise their hand. I don't see anybody's hands, 45. How many of you drive like 45 to 50? It's like a range. How many of you drive 35? Because we're all going to be like, stay off the road, right? Anybody drive like way slower? Okay, I do sometimes, but it's not on purpose. I just have attention issues. Like, just give me a little nudge and I'll be fine. How many guys, you don't care, you just drive until you come up the car in front of you? That explains a lot. Do you see why we can't get along on the road? So here's what happens. There's something in here that is called the truth. The hard, fast, unshakable, foundational truth. Now, some of you have strong opinions about speed limits. And listen, I'm not going to sit here and I don't care. You can drive 58. I don't care. Just don't ride my tail. I say this because it's really indicative of how we process and think about what happens. You see, what happens is there's a truth. You know what the truth is? The truth we probably all agree on. The truth is you should drive safely. Right? I mean, some of you are like, who cares about safety? Well, see, that's why we need laws for you. There's a truth that says we all should drive safely. And someone says, well, I'm a really good driver, so 80 is good for me. That's safe. And some says, well, Mike's going to be on the road, and 80 is not safe for anybody if Mike's driving 80. So it needs to be 45. And now then something has to happen that establishes this as something that we all are going to agree on. Here's the thing. So they come in and say, here's the speed limit. Here's the law. Here's the authority that's going to come into play. And that authority is only as strong as our willingness to submit to it. It's amazing, if you've ever traveled overseas, how unbelievably submissive Americans actually are to governance and to laws, and actually how, I can't believe I'm going to say this, how non-corrupt our government really is. There are places, and we were just over there, to get your driver's license, it doesn't matter if you pass the test or not, you just bribe the officer and you get your license. Here's a 20, here's your license. And these are like 15, 16-year-old people. This is not like their parents and big, this is everybody. Like the fact that we comply with a lot of things means that we have some sense, okay, I'm going to drive this way because we all sort of agree that this is a thing. But here's the deal. Think about what the law was. The law wasn't the intent. The law wasn't, hey, we're going to sit around and figure out how to, now I think they probably do this now. That's a whole other issue. But the law wasn't, hey, let's figure out how we can spend a lot of money on signs all over the place. And we'll put 45, and then we'll change the speed limit to 35, and then we'll change it back to 45, and we'll just, whoever's making signs will make a lot of money. Anyway, you get the idea. But nobody thought of that. What happened was people couldn't agree on what the truth was, so they created laws as a concession. I've been noodling on this for a while, because even think about God. I don't know if you realize this or not, the laws, the Ten Commands, what God's instructed as his laws and his ordinances didn't come in until quite a ways into the Bible. Think about this. Do you think God created humans and said, oh, don't kill each other? No, he created humans, said, I want humans to get along, and humans couldn't get along, and they couldn't figure out what that, so they started killing each other. God said, whoa, don't kill. He didn't intend to tell us not to kill each other. He didn't intend to have to tell us not to lie. He didn't intend to have to tell us all these other things. What happens was when we couldn't live out in a relationship to the truth that was authentic and free, we got laws. Does that make sense? So this is what's happening in our culture. This is what happens. And what this does, when we think about the speed limit, it really is when you see a sign, you say, I'm gonna drive that speed limit or some variation of that, right, between 5 and 7 miles an hour, whatever your range is, you're basically saying there is some adherence to authority. To authority. We talked about over the last couple weeks this idea when Jesus said, enter through the narrow gate. For wide is the road that leads to destruction, but narrow is the gate that leads to life, and few will find it. And my point is, this is not a tightrope. It's not a moral tightrope. Go, well, I drive 45, so I'm on the narrow. All the rest of you, you're on the road to destruction. It's not a tightrope that you walk, this moral line. If you mess up, you're off in destruction. It's this way, it's an entrance point where you move from one place into another. You enter in, and it requires us to slow down. It requires us to submit and say, God, and we're going to enter into something brand new. To say, God, I'm going to trust you and enter through the way you have called me to enter. Oswald Chambers, probably the most famous devotional book on the planet, my utmost for his highest. Some of you have seen it. I hear people use this all the time. Danny, one of our pastors, sent me this week. And Oswald Chambers in the devotion this past week says his cross, Jesus' cross, is the door by which every member of the human race can enter into the life of God. His cross is the door by which every member of the human race can enter into the life of God. By his resurrection, he has the right to give eternal life to anyone. And by his ascension, our Lord entered heaven, keeping the door open for humanity. This narrow gate that we enter through, what fundamentally happens, this is kind of picking up from a couple weeks ago, is it changes your center. When you move from this place where I'm in the center, the whole world revolves around me, and you move in, and all of a sudden Jesus becomes your center, and you begin to see the world differently. We've got to think about this. Because what does this mean? How is it that Jesus becomes your center? If you say, I've given my life to Christ, and I'm living in a relationship with him, how does it affect the way in which I live in this world? When we enter through the narrow gate, the center changes. And what it means is he has authority in what and how we engage in the world. That Jesus Christ has authority in my life as to what I engage in and how I engage in those things. And the same is true for every person who claims this about Christ. And so this is what we've looked at over the last couple weeks, this passage in James chapter 4. And it comes out of the context. If you're friends of the world, you're enemies of God. Don't you know that God has called you with a purpose? That's the Mike paraphrase of that. And then he says this, but he gives more grace. He gives more grace. Therefore, it says, God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. So what I begin to do is I begin to think about this, right? So I take and I say, here's this idea of pride, and here's this idea of humility. And it says here that God stands in opposition to those who are proud, but he gives grace to the humble. So I begin to outline this and just kind of think about it. I write it in my journal like this, and I go, let me process through this. And I realize that both of these have some relationship to the truth. The relationship of pride to the truth is I define it. The truth is as I see it. The relationship of humility to the truth is as someone else defines it. And what I'm saying is the truth, we talked to this last week, that when you take what is true and you submit it to the truth, we're talking about submitting it to the King, to Jesus, and to say, how do we do this? So on one side is you bargain and say, hey, God, here's what I think, and I think this, and we begin to look for evidence as to how it buttresses and justifies our position. And over here we say, God, whatever you have said and however you've said it, that's what I'm going to trust. And on one side, he opposes. The other side, he just continues to give grace. I mean, look at what it says next, right? He opposes the proud, gives grace to the humble. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Submit yourselves. What he is commanding, asking, inviting us into is to live our lives underneath his authority. So here's what I've been noodling on and trying to figure out how to explain this. So pride, God opposes, leads to a sense of superiority. Think about it. It's why you believe, if you were one of the ones who raised your hand and said, I drive 45 to 52, you raised your hand. You think everybody who drives way faster, you think you're a much better driver than them. They don't know, they're a terrible driver. I can't believe they drive like this. And those of you who drive really fast, you think all of us are terrible drivers. What's it rooted in? Is it rooted in humble submission to the law? Or is it rooted in what we think is right? Think about how this plays itself out. Because, I'll pick another one. So in North Carolina, at 14 and a half, you can take driver's ed. You have to take it, and then you have to have it before you get your driver's permit. So if you take it at 15 years of age, you can get your learner's permit, and it means you can drive with an adult in the car and scare the bejeebies out of your parents, which we're doing that right now. My daughter's about to turn 16. I'm like, I'm trying to decide, am I ready for her to drive, or I'm just ready for her to stop driving me? She's not here. She's going to kill me. I'm just kidding. She's a great driver. I'm just kidding. She is. So then what happens is for the first 6 months, as you're 16, you can drive with any family member in the car. And you can drive with one other person, but you can't drive past 9 o'clock. You know this, right? Y'all know this? So it's actually a pain, because at 16, your kids are going out and they want to drive, and they drive, and then they want to stay out past 9, and then it's not only do you have to go get them, but you have to take 2 cars to go get them. It's like, I'm like, what? So what do you do? So my kid's a good driver. Why don't you just drive past 9? don't you just do it? It's 9:20, it's 9:30. You can always say you're going to work or home from work, because you can do that too. If you're employed, you can drive. They're coming home from work. You can say those things. What are you doing? Who's in the center of that thinking? It's this doesn't apply to me because of whatever reasons you would put in it. And what I'm saying is, I'm not going, oh, you should feel guilty now, but all these years, you speed, you should feel guilty. You let your kids drive past 9, you should feel guilty. What I'm saying is, how do you process authority? Because your kids learn stuff. You know that, right? So at 15 or 16, they're driving and you're kind of like, yes, no big deal. And then the next big law kicks in 5 years later, right? When you get to drink after you're 21, the drinking age is 21. So, well, I think, you know, you ought to be able to drink. Okay, well, it doesn't matter. The drinking age is 21. Now, is there any difference between a 20-year-old who's 20 and 364 or 3 days and a person who's 21 and 2 days? There's no difference. There's no difference. So somewhere along the way, someone said there's a truth that we don't want kids drinking irresponsibly. And I'm not making any indictments or anything about drinking. I just use this as an example. It's the least controversial one I get myself, or the most controversial I get myself in the least trouble with. There's a truth. We don't want kids drinking under, you know, young and blah, 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 whatever the reasoning is. I don't drink, by the way, and I'll tell you why. It's not because it's a biblical. I got enough issues. I don't need to create any more for myself. That was free, complete free of charge. Because some of you are wondering, like, where's Mike? Someone said this, and then they said, well, how do we mandate this? Oh, 21. And it was 18 first, 21 now, whatever. So all of a sudden, what's happened over here, we said, these things don't apply to me. We just continue to carry it on. And everything becomes, and what's interesting, if you listen really carefully, you'll actually hear this. You'll hear this. Well, I can. And all of a sudden we realize that who's in the center of the way we process authority? Who's in the center of the way we process authority? You see, pride yields superiority. And it looks a lot like authority, but it's not. It's me, Lord. It's exactly what Jesus talked about. You know, we do not lord our authority over people as the people who are in power do. We don't. That's superiority. That's you thinking that you have something that you're supposed to. God stands in opposition to that. Humility actually yields true authority. I have two brothers. I told you last week I was the favorite. So mom would cook dinner and she'd say, we need y'all to come home for dinner. My dad would whistle, woo, woo, you know, whistle. We come home for dinner. I'd be the first one in. Hey, mom and dad, I'm here for dinner. Look at how favorite son, I'm here for dinner. And then she would say something like this. She'd say, go tell your brothers it's time for dinner. Because they come in and they go down to the basement and start playing more video games or whatever. I'm up there, mom, look at me. I'm here ready for dinner. Mike, go tell your brothers it's time for dinner. What has she given me? She's given me authority. You're speaking for me. Go tell your brothers to come to dinner. So I go downstairs. I say, hey, guys, it's time for dinner. Mom told me to come get y'all because I was already there, right? Let me ask you a question. Am I more interested in making sure that I'm number one, or am I more interested in making sure that the will of my mother gets accomplished? You see exactly where this is going, right? So here's the problem with the issues. Authority, true authority, is the expression of humble submission. True authority is the expression of humble submission. If it's not that, it's this. And what I hear most often in our culture, whether it's politics or even the church, it's mostly here. I'll tell you, I have been just twisted in a lot of ways in how I've had to deal with people on the other side of the issues that I don't agree with. Okay? And trying to say, here's what I want to do. Am I more interested in making sure that I am seen as being right, or am I more concerned about fulfilling the will and the advancement of the will of my Father? This is not an easy question to answer. But here's what I think, and I can't tell you, I'm going to have to leave some of this with you. I'm going to just say, I'm going to drop this in your lap and go, you're going to have to do something with this. So what I think happens is we have these two things going on. We have those of us who are Christ followers, we want for his will to be done. We want for what he says to happen, and all those things are all true. And so what we do, and a lot of us have been taught this way, this may be how you've been taught, is so whenever you're dealing with whatever issue, whether it's the drinking age, whether it's the driving age, whether it's speed limit, or any other issue, pick your hot button topics. And you go to Christ, and you say, Christ, you say, Jesus, what is it that you say about this issue? And we spend a lot of time, and we write a lot of papers, and we get all this stuff. We say, Christ, I want for you to inform this issue. And then what do we try to do? We try to rally everybody around, building unity and building oneness around the issue. It does two very destructive things. And this is, you might disagree with that, this, okay, and I'm okay with that. This is my, God, I'm trying to understand this thinking, and I want to lead our church well, and I know what has worked, or what we've done has not worked. So that's where I'm at in this. But I want you to play this out with me for a few minutes. The first thing that we do is when we do this is we usually wind up somewhere over here, because what we're trying to do is to go, God is on our side. You ever seen political arguments like that? We had a whole generation that did that. And I can like get behind and go, oh yeah, I see. And they go, it didn't work. It just didn't work. So danger number one is that we actually try to get God on our side. If you believe like I do that there is a source of evil in the world that is the enemy of God, Satan, I've got to think that there are a couple of things he wants to do. Number one, he wants to keep everybody divided. That's probably a pretty good strategy. But maybe there's an even more effective strategy. What if he allowed people to unify around anything other than God? What if he allowed us to get so excited about an issue, we said, oh, look at this issue, we're all united on this. And we began to give glory to the issue that unites us. Danger number two is that it actually becomes idolatry. So I'm scratching my head going, okay, I should just stick to the speed limit. Let's just tell everybody not to speed and we can just leave it there. Because the law is way easier. If I can just get you to comply with some standard, right? The narrow road, it's just not what God is after. He wants for you to be alive. He wants for you to be full. He wants for you to be free. And it only happens when we learn to live in submission to the truth and we have this idea. So what do? We have been given this authority. You've been given authority. You've been given authority over your body. You've been given authority over your mind. You've been given authority within your family and within the realm, and it just begins to ripple outward from there. You've been given authority. And authority is the expression of this humble submission to the truth. What if you reverse this, and instead of bringing Christ to the issue, we brought the issue to Christ? What if you reverse this? What if instead of trying to gain unity here, you begin to gain unity here? I know what you're saying. You're saying the same thing I'm saying. But they'll never agree with me. And my question is, who are you trusting? This is the hardest question for me to answer. If I bring people to Christ, how in the world are they ever going to agree with me on the issue when I'm right? And there are some times when we are, where you're just right, and that's okay. You know what I realized? If I'm bringing Christ to the issue, guess who I'm asking them to trust to change? Trust me. Let me help you be like me so we can be like him. And if you can figure this out, bringing people to Christ, and this is what I found is the hardest part, you actually have to trust him to change them, which is kind of what he wants to do anyway. See, this isn't about, you know, God loves us and we're just all going to get, no, this is about us being formed into the very image of the one who has made us. There's a great quote by Max Lucado. He said, God loves you just the way you are, but he loves you too much to leave you that way. Look at this in Ephesians. For he himself is our peace. He, talking about Jesus, who has made us both one and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility by abolishing the law of the commandments and ordinances, that he might create in himself one new man in place of two, so making peace. Keep going, look at this. And might reconcile both of us in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility. You ever heard the phrase that the ground at the foot of the cross is level? That he might create in himself one new humanity in place of the division, and so making peace. If you think that God is going to allow us to become one around an issue at the expense of becoming one around him, I think we're kidding ourselves. Like, and this is not the way Mike Ashcraft wants to preach, let me tell you. I want to bring like, oh, because I believe sometimes that I'm right. And I want you to think like me and believe like me, but what if we entered into this world and said, God, what do you want? What do you really want? Can we bring people to you and trust them? Remember what he said, right, Oswald Chambers? The cross is the door that allows every human access to the life of God. Now, here's the thing. Some of you are on different sides of the issue. And let me read one more thing to you. This is what Jesus actually prayed. I've given them glory that you gave me, to pray unto his Father. I've given them the glory that you gave to me so that they will be one. They'll be one just like you and I are one. I in them and you in me, so that they may be brought to complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as I loved you. That's his vision. And I know what you're thinking. Some of you are on this side, regardless of which side you're on. You've got issues that you think, I just think the church is antiquated and it's not any good and blah, blah. I'm right. And it's the same thing as those who are saying, I've got to be right. It's the same exact argument on two different sides of the issue. What I'm asking you to do is to consider, what if, instead of trying to build unity around here, we built unity around here? Do we think that Christ can be trusted with his kingdom? Now, I don't have an answer to this. It's still in the question. What I would love it is if every single person in here decided, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to give it a shot and see what Christ might do. I believe it just might bring the change we're looking for. Let's pray together. God, I offer all this to you to take and to use it in our heads and our hearts as you see fit. I confess that there are lots of things and ways in which I wish were different. I wish that you had maybe given us some different instructions, but you told us very clearly how we're to live in this world. God, I pray that you would help us to know exactly when to stand and speak and to do so with graciousness and love, seasoned with grace, that you will know, help us know when we need to simply sit and listen. And that God, that both of those ways would be used not to buttress an argument or to win a position, but to bring people to you. Father, I want to declare that I trust people with your care and ask for you to change all of us that we might be perfectly formed into the image that you intend. That's my hope. That's my prayer, that we might bring redemption and a sense of your beauty to this watching world. Not so that our lives will be better, but so that you will be seen as our God. And it is in the promises, according to the promises you've given, in the name of your Son, Jesus, that I offer these prayers to you. Amen.